Coming up on Chasing the Natty, last week I gave you guys 10 wide receivers that you can grab in the final rounds of your draft. So of course, this week we'll be taking a look at the running backs who could be available in the final rounds of your drafts that could pay off in a huge way down the line. We have all of that and more coming right after this.
Sellers picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone, touchdown! What a start!
It's Reed, and there he goes! Nobody's gonna catch him! Touchdown!
It's caught! Jeremiah Smith! Touchdown, Ohio State! The legend grows!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. Hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com, subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devi, Campus of Canton Leagues, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog Best Ball, Tadpole Bowl, we got it all. If you've played it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, make sure when you sign up for one of our yearly memberships, you use that promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do something like that, totally fine. You can just show us some love by leaving a like, comment down below, subscribe on the YouTube side of things. We just passed 800 subscribers. That is awesome. Would love to get to 1,000 by the time the season starts. So help us out if you can. And then on the podcast side of things, make sure you leave a 5-star review. Make sure you're following the show wherever you are listening. Not only does that show us support, but also helps the game of college fantasy football in general. If you have any further questions or just want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. So y'all, here we are, part two of this series. I think part two of two. I'm debating whether or not to do a quarterback show on this, but as I thought about it more and more, I don't really think there's a ton of, I mean, there's a lot of safe guys you can grab at end of drafts, but not really a ton of upside plays, which has really been the theme of the last 2 weeks. So might just end up doing the wide receivers and running backs. Like I said, last week we did wide receivers. This week we're doing running backs. And here's the thing, y'all. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I'm not very good at finding late value at running back. There is a reason why I go running back heavy in a lot of my drafts. Because, boy, do I not like looking for it later in drafts. I just got finished with a Tadpole Bowl draft hosted by Dwight Peoples. And I hit running back early, but I was still trying to find some guys in the second half of that draft. And I was miserable the whole time trying to find some value there. So I've enlisted some help for today. Last week I ran solo. This week I'm bringing on some help. And so I had to consult the running back expert of CFF himself, the human embodiment of the greatest cartoon side character of all time, Waddles from Gravity Falls. His name is Mr. Justin Leo, the volume pig himself. Justin, welcome on to the show, man.
Hey, man. Yeah, no, it's good to be back. I have to say it's one of the most mind-blowing stats when you say you just hit 800 subscribers on your channel. I mean, you should be so much more subscribed. I mean, you've been doing this for a few years now. Great content every week. I mean, obviously a must-watch if you're a CFF player. I think there'll be a lot more traffic coming in your way, you know, if these Scott Fish Tadpole Bowls, things like that. So, I think everybody who's listening to this is obviously already subscribed, but definitely, you know, share it with your friends, get the word out there because Jared does great work. And yeah, man, I'm happy to be back. Happy to talk about some running backs. It's a tough challenge today, I think, finding late round running backs. It's as we were talking pre-show, even more tough than I think finding late round wide receivers, but it can be done. I'm not going to say, you know, these guys are slam dunk 100% hit rate, but there are definitely some guys who are intriguing and offer some upside. So happy, excited to talk about it.
Oh, just like with the wide receivers, right? There's a reason why they're going as late as they are. There's going to be question marks around all of these guys. And I'm sure when you bring up guys, I'm going to have questions for you. When I bring up guys, you're going to have questions for me. And we'll do our best to discuss them here, but I do think that for the most part, these are 10 guys that both of us agree are relatively at least underrated compared to where they probably should be going in drafts. I will say, for those listening who didn't catch last week's episode, one, go check that out. It was a great episode. Of course, I think it was a great episode. I did it. It was a great episode, but the criteria basically we're looking at here is either guys that are undrafted in our ADP or guys that are going in like the last five rounds of ADP, because even guys that like have a last like round 25 through 30 ADP, they have a decent shot of going undrafted in your draft because those rounds are just filled with people that, you know, like you're grabbing my guys at that point. So I guess Justin and I will be here talking about our guys, our running backs that we are going to go take shots on there. So before we get into that, I will do a little bit of housekeeping here. One, I already mentioned campusacanton.com. Go subscribe there. But even more so, go and check out the CFF guide. It is going to be available July 4th, ready for July 4th weekend. 200-plus pages of CFF content. Got all the team profiles, including the new teams for this year. We got our player profiles again. It is a labor of love that we, the CFF team, put together here at Campus Canton every single year. It is a phenomenal piece of work, and currently you can get it for only $15. It's currently 25% off if you pre-order it. So, yeah, go take advantage of that. It's probably the best deal in the college fantasy space, I would say. And then also, of course, Justin does phenomenal content. If you're not subscribed to his content over at volumepigs.com, make sure you go and do that. I don't want to say I pick favorites in terms of who writes the best articles, because we have a ton of great writers in the CFF community, but there is something very unique about Justin's writing style that makes him a ton of fun to read. So make sure you go and check that out. All right, with that being said, Justin, let's get to some of these players, man. Let's go talk about some running backs, your favorite topic in the world. And real quick, I will explain the graphics that are up on the screen if you're watching on YouTube, and if you're listening on podcasts. I'm not going to read out these numbers every single player or anything like that, but what I will do is I'll explain to you what is on the YouTube graphics so that if you're interested, you can then go and just watch the YouTube version of it. You can see it there. But basically, along with each running back, and I will say this first example is a bad one because I have NA for all the player stats because we are talking about a true freshman, but I have two system stats. I have the two-year carry average of the top running back, or in two cases actually today, I actually have the RB2 numbers there, and I'll explain why when I get there. But then I also have the system yards per attempt, just to kind of give you an idea of what this system's like, what kind of efficiency the backs in this system have done the last couple of years. And then the player stats go a little bit deeper. You got obviously the yards per attempt for rushing. You have the yards per reception, but I also have their career breakaway percentage. That is a stat that I have identified in the past on PFF that does kind of point to, or at the very least help eliminate some of these players if they have a very bad breakaway percentage, which I'm trying to remember the actual definition here. So a breakaway run is a rushing yardage on designed attempts more than 15 yards. So it's the percentage of designed runs that achieve more than 15 yards. Basically, the number I look for is about 25% or higher on a running back. If you're lower than 25% on your attempts, that's a pretty bad sign of you being able to carry a heavy workload in the future or being talented enough for a team to want to rely on you going forward. And then the other one I have here is their yards after contact per attempt. Obviously, that is a great measurement in terms of running backs being able to create their own yards. You know, offensive lines, they open holes. That's obviously very important for running backs, but it's even more important when you got a guy like Ashton Ginty who can just break tackles and create his own yards after the first guy touches him. So that's what I got on the screen there. All the player stats except for the career breakaway percentage are just over the last 2 years. Same with the system stats, just the last 2 years. Because I want to make sure I get the most recent stats for them. So, enough explaining there. We'll go with our first guy here, who is Deshaun Ford, running back out of UM Monroe. Simple explanation here. This is you taking your shot on the next Ahmad Hardy, right? And very similar fashion, Ahmad Hardy was a true freshman last year. Now Deshaun Ford comes into the UM Monroe, and he's currently going at the end of drafts. Meanwhile, his, I guess, partner, Zach Palmer-Smith, who comes in from Richmond, he is quickly rising in ADP currently. I think I've seen him go as high. I think he went as high as the fourth round on the live CFF draft I did earlier this week. And to me, it's crazy that he's just shot up versus Deshaun Ford still kind of hanging down here in the last five rounds. And on one hand, I kind of get it, right? Because, like, you know, Zach Palmer Smith, he's a veteran. He just got done with his own 1,000-yard campaign at Richmond. The jump from Richmond to the Sun Belt isn't like a huge jump in competition. So it's reasonable to suspect that Zach Palmer Smith will be able to succeed if he is given this opportunity. But on the other hand, like, Ford has his own, like, he has his own positives for him as well. Ford is a top 50 running back in this class, which is insane for UL Monroe to get. In fact, Ford is actually the second highest rated football player ever recruited by UL Monroe. The only other player that outrated him in 247's database, I can't remember, it was a defensive player. He's like a four-star. It was a complete, I don't want to say fluke, but I guess it's a fluke by UL Monroe recruiting standards, right? The stars aligned for him, but Ford is now the second highest player they've ever recruited. So that tells me they're going to want to make sure they feature him so that they can get some guys in the future if he has the talent level, right? In addition, Ford's been named as the RB1 in Phil Steele's magazine, right? That is a notable data point. Obviously, Phil Steele's not the end-all be-all of depth charts or anything like that, right? But I do think it is notable. I think there's plenty of smoke here to say that Ford is the guy, in which case you could have your next Bryant Vincent RB1, you know, your Ahmad Hardy's, your Ja'Cory Kroski Merritts, your Jermaine Brown Jr.'s from UAB back when Bryant Vincent was there. I think Ford's worth a shot in the last five rounds. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, well, this, you make a lot of excellent points. You know, I would say this is one of those backfields that I'm really interested in. It may be one of the most interesting backfields just to see how it plays out. Like, I'm just really curious to see, because they've got this veteran that they brought in, as you mentioned, CPS, who's coming off a really productive season and presumably, you know, is looking to be a starter in his next stop, as tends to happen when you're leaving sort of a really productive role. And then you have Deshaun Ford, who literally, when he committed, evoked the name Ahmad Hardy, said he wanted to be the next Ahmad Hardy. And I actually give him kudos, because he didn't just say that because he wanted to have a lot of rushing production in year one. He literally said he wants to use that year one and transfer into his next stop, if I remember correctly. Something along those lines. I think I'm paraphrasing. But I give him kudos for the honesty. So, very interesting backfield. And, you know, as you mentioned, I think ZPS has kind of climbed recently, whereas Deshaun Ford's kind of faded. A lot of that, I think, is just due to sort of CFF industry manufactured hype. You know, ZPS has been mentioned on a couple of podcasts here and there. I think some, like myself, have written about him. That doesn't help. So I think there's a little element of that, because there actually isn't anything, as far as I know. Well, obviously, I guess there's the Phil Steele information, but outside of that, I don't think there's any actual like reports or information that are like concrete about who's starting, you know, where the pecking order is at.
I think you have a better chance of finding a polar bear in a volcano than an actual ULM report for UL Monroe.
It's crazy. ULM's like, yes, 1.01 of the hardest program to get information on, which hurts their players for CFF, right? Part of it is just like the uncertainty. You don't know where anybody stands in that program. Mm-hmm. So at this point, you know, it is a complete crapshoot. And whenever it is a crapshoot, I am of the mind that you might as well go for the cheaper of the two, where if they're fairly indistinguishable in terms of profiles, you might as well just wait for the second one. I don't have the exact number, but I know ZPS was not eligible for this exercise, so he must have a higher ADP than Deshaun Ford, but I don't think it's that much higher. I mean, it's probably still in the high 200s. Nonetheless, it does sort of make sense to me that, you know, why not take a chance on Ford? He has just as good of a chance to start. Good shout out on the Phil Steele thing, although, you know, as some of the guys in the Campus to Canton Slack might say, he's a bit washed these days, but it's not nothing, right? Like, he's talking to the coaches. It's better than what
it's
we
a data point.
Have. It is a data point. It's better than, you know, the alternative, which is nothing. We don't have any information. So, yeah, I agree with a lot of the points you made. I mean, I've written about both the players in this backfield. They're both really intriguing. Deshaun Ford, I think, even had, like, maybe not committable offers, but I know on his recruiting profile, he had, like, offers listed from, like, Alabama, some of these Southeastern Conference programs. I'm not exactly sure what happened there. Maybe he had, like, interest early on and then sort of lost it. Not, something along those lines, who knows?
Or
But
he's just
it.
doing what he said he was going to do, right? Where he's like, I'm just going to go somewhere where I can get on the field, get in front of eyeballs, rather than me go to a crowded backfield where I'm suddenly guy number four to start off.
Yeah, which if that is the case, I respect it. I wish more players would do that, especially if the transfer portal rules the way they are. I mean, you're better off almost doing that, play for a year to reset your market value and then transfer. But nonetheless, I think he's a very, very interesting. They're both interesting to me, like just because they're so enigmatic, you don't have any information on either. Both profiles, I think, are quite appealing. ZPS with his production at the FCS level, Sean Ford with his recruiting pedigree. So I'm just really interested because it's hard for me to imagine both not being the bell cow here and being happy about it. So like somebody is going to be upset. Like I unless Vincent breaks tendency and plays both of them, and maybe that is going to happen. But when I wrote about CPS like a month ago, I remember looking at the numbers, and Vincent's system has to be like the number one running back. Like it's kind of strange to say that because he's been at all of these sort of obscure programs, but his system is really probably the most like consistent at the running back position over the last 5 years out of any program. So we'll see what happens. But I agree with a lot of the points you made, Jared.
Yeah, among the players we'll talk about today, Brian Vincent has the second highest 2-year carry average, and the guy that's number one, I don't even know if we can fully attribute to him per se. Versus Vincent, we know for a fact it's him. Zach Palmer-Smith, by the way, in our May ADP for Campus of Canton, currently at 11th round, 10th pick. So
Yeah,
again,
and
there's a
just curious,
huge, huge gap growing between these two.
who is number one on the 2 year career app? Is it like the Boise State guys or?
Nope, not Boise State. We'll get to them here about halfway through the show.
Okay.
So,
That sounds good.
and then was I gonna make any other points here? I think that's pretty much it. Yeah. All right, let's move on to your first guy here, Justin, that you wanted to bring up, and that is Mr. Jay Ducker or Javon Ducker or whatever he's going by nowadays, running back formerly of Sam Houston Temple or formerly Sam Houston Memphis. And Northern Illinois, now at Temple, his fourth G5 spot here. He comes in. What do you find interesting about him coming here to Temple?
Yeah, well, funny thing about the name, something about these Temple running backs, they all want to change their names. I think Ray Davis did the same thing, started off his career at Temple, changed from Raymond to Ray. So there's a sort of a quirky detail there. But with Ducker, I mean, I think there's a couple of things that are intriguing to me. One, he's been productive before. In fact, I think it was actually his very first season in college football. He ran for like 1,000 yards, granted at a different stop in a different league. But the difference between the MAC and Temple is not huge. And the second component is the new staff, new system that's there at Temple. Now this is another player that I've written about, and when I did write about Ducker, I mentioned the primary concern is that staff that are coming over from Montana State, a lot of their success last year, and yeah, I think you had the stat in the show sheet, but I'll say it out loud here. The RB1, Scott-Trey Humphrey, ran for like 1,300 yards, had over 200 carries. So had a very good sort of productive campaign. I think actually they had two running backs who hit
They
1,000
did.
yards last year. So there's a lot of success, but it was predicated not really on huge volume. I actually don't even, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm not sure if Scott-Trey Humphrey had 200 or more carries. Maybe he was just short. Do you know the
He
stat
had
offhand?
exactly 200 carries, but the point I was going to bring up was that it like he had
15
200 carries
games.
and 1300 yards, but it took 15 games to get there. Right? So
Yeah,
that
okay.
like
So
once I averaged that
good.
out to 12 games, it suddenly didn't look as great.
Yeah, so and that's the point I was just about to make as well, is that is kind of the primary, I guess, concern with this profile is the rushing success of this system last year at the FCS level is predicated on elite efficiency. They're one of the best teams within the FCS at Montana State, whereas the paradigm sort of completely shifts here at Temple, where they're pretty much the bottom of the hierarchy. But they're in a pretty weak league as well. It's not exactly like they're playing P4 opponents every week. I think with Ducker, one of the things is, in spring it was pretty clear from the updates out of Temple, like he's the starter, one of the starters. I think he had something like 20 something carries in the spring game. Granted, he only, I think, accumulated like 67 yards or something like that. So that might be, a warning of what's to come this season. But hopefully they can figure out maybe some more efficiency when they're running the football. But I think, this is a pure sort of almost volume play where I think he's going to be the guy for them who takes a lot of carries. I don't know if it's going to be, 250 or something, but I think he's going to be the primary sort of playmaker in that offense. And this is a system that had success at the running back position, granted at a lower level, yes, but if they can sort of achieve some level of that success at this level. And I guess the final point I would make is, it's, what is his name? Casey Keeler, I think, from Sam Houston, who came over from Sam Houston at Temple. He had Ducker, obviously, at his previous stop, obviously liked him enough to want to bring him over with him as well, right? So that's always a good sign, too.
Oh yeah, the continuity and coaching staff is always great there. Yeah, this is one of the ones I definitely had a lot of questions about and everything, because I like ever since your article, I saw people drafting him kind of a little bit higher and higher, and I wouldn't be surprised if his ADP got too high for us in this show pretty soon. But I just had a lot of questions because for me, you kind of hit the nail on the head already, where a lot came together for that Montana State season right last year, right? He had a great offensive line, elite rushers. Again, I just talked to Josh Chevalier on the latest live draft episode. We talked Scotre Humphrey and just how much praise he's getting by the new staff there at New Mexico. Clearly, this guy was playing at a high, or he was a higher level than who he was playing against. I mean, the dude averaged like 7 yards per carry last year. And so, like, yeah, the system yards per carry the last 2 years has averaged 7 yards per carry. Like, they've done a phenomenal job. And now this offensive coordinator, Tyler Walker, comes over here to Temple where, his system last year relied on a super efficient running back, which Ducker's fun. He's fine, but he's not super efficient. He had 4.8 yards per attempt his last 2 years. Right, which is still good, don't get me wrong, but it's not 7 yards per carry. It relies on a strong offensive line, which Temple's offensive line ranked bottom 10 among FCS teams last year in line yards, which is, how much yards they're able to generate for their running backs and players just by themselves. They also ranked bottom 10 in run blocking grades, according to PFF, which I know those grades are a little wishy-washy to some people, but again, another data point to clearly show that this system's going to get a downgrade in the offensive line that it's working with. The other part of it is that we keep saying system. We keep saying system here. Walker's called plays for 1 year. Like the, I we don't really know if this is his going to be his MO moving forward, right? He worked with what he had last year. If you look at what Montana State did the year before, he pretty much just kept doing what they were doing already. So who's to say he doesn't come here to Temple, realize his offensive line's like, oh crap, this could be really bad. The other thing about Temple is they haven't won more than 3 games since 2019. They're going to be behind a lot. Now, Ducker can catch the ball, right? But are they going to put him in a place where he's going to catch enough balls to make up for the game script he would lose out by them playing from behind so much, So again, I'm crapping on a dude that's going, last 5 rounds of drafts and everything, but I do want to kind of pump the brakes a little bit because I have started to see people reach up for him a little bit past this range in a couple of drafts. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think Walker, yeah, Jay Ducker can be like, I don't see immense upside, right? I mean, that you sort of hit the nail on the head. I don't know that Temple is going to be a team that plays with the lead a lot, but I think he's going to be sort of their guy. I think Ducker is their primary playmaker. Like I said, in the spring game, they just handed him the rock over and over again. And granted, like I said, the efficiency wasn't great, and that's the primary thing I'm concerned about. But if we're talking best ball, so long as Temple can move the football, and maybe that only happens 3 or 4 times this year, I think Tucker can have like some pretty good games. So if
Agreed.
you're drafting him at the very end of a best ball, I think there's value there, right? So it depends on like what it is you're looking for.
I'm trying to look up stats from Terrence Worthy. He's still hanging around there at Temple.
He is, yes.
I know some people were pretty excited about him, so maybe they have to wait another year. Because I agree with you that Ducker's probably the RB1 here. All right, let's move on to our next guy here. And I want to talk about Elijah Green over at Sam Houston. This, in my opinion, is one of the guys that I just think is probably going too low in drafts right now. This is the Phil Longo RB1. If you need any kind of reminders as to what kind of value is there, one, in his worst 2 years as an offensive coordinator, I say, with Phil Longo at Cincinnati, his running backs were still averaging 202 carries over 12 games. Now, granted, both Tommy Walker and Braylon Allen didn't play 12 games, but so I extrapolated that a little bit, but they were on pace for over 200 carries in both of their years, right? And then the guys before that, Tawie Walker, Braylon Allen, just mentioned them already. Elijah Green, who we're talking about now, in the 1 year at North Carolina, he got hurt. But before he got hurt, he was their bell cow back. Ty Chandler at UNC, Michael Carter, Javonte Williams at UNC as well, Scotty Phillips, Jordan Wilkins. The list just simply goes on for Phil Longo. He loves finding himself an RB1 and riding them to the bone. And now the Bearcats have brought in several running backs from the portal, but in my opinion, none of them have this same previous connection with Longo that Elijah Green got. Even before we got confirmation from the G5 Hives episode on Sam Houston, by the way, once again, shout out G5 Hive. Before I got confirmation from them saying that Green's expected to be the RB1, this whole transfer to me had the vibes of Longo telling Green, hey man, I know the whole Indiana thing didn't really work out. I know you got 1 year of eligibility left, so why don't you just come hang out with me your final year of college? We've worked together before, a place with way less competition, and we'll send you out on a high note. Let's just hand you the ball off 200 times and see what we can do. So I think Elijah Green at Sam Houston's an incredible value in drafts right now. I think the only way this doesn't work out is if Green gets injured at some point. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I dig it. I think it's a good idea. I mean, I can see the vision and agree with a lot of the things you're mentioning. I guess with Sam Houston, it's sort of similar to Temple, where it's like, okay, like how effective are they going to be this year? There's a lot of questions with that offense. Obviously, the quarterback returns. That's great. But, you know, I think we you know, we're sort of in the dark with like what's going to happen with the playmakers at wide receiver. And at running back, you know, I also watched that episode. And as you mentioned, great episode once again, great interview by the guys at G5 Hive. And yeah, I mean, if you look at Longo's sort of history, he's got a pretty good sort of track list of some decent running backs there, some good volume that's being dished out. So, you know, I think it's a question of like, well, how effective will Sam Houston's offense be year one under Phil Longo? You know, he's going to be implementing his new system. But, you know, that concern exists at a lot of different programs anytime you're switching coaching staff. So it's not a terrible concern to have. I think it's a good idea. You know, I can't say really too much in terms of what concerned me with Elijah Green. Especially if you're taking him at the very end of a draft, I think he's a pretty intriguing idea. And I think really that whole offense, right? If you think about some of those wide receivers too, there's a lot of interesting dart throw options for drafters.
I don't know if Watson is going in the last five rounds of draft, Hunter Watson, the quarterback there.
I'm more talking at skill players.
Well, I'm saying like if he would be another guy, if he's going in the last five rounds, right, he'd be somebody that I would throw into a quarterback version of this episode. Because again, Phil Longo has done great things with dual threat quarterbacks in the past as well. I have no concern about Phil Longo being able to get that offense rolling in year one. Again, he's playing the CUSA. Like, Phil Longo, if quite frankly, is running an offense that is above the level that you typically see at the CUSA level. Granted, again, he's working with players that probably aren't as good, but that's why he brought in guys like Elijah Green, right? They know his system. He knows that they can compete even at the ACC level. They should be able to compete at the CUSA level. They didn't bring in I don't think they brought in any wide receiver help. So that tells me, at the very least, he feels somewhat comfortable with those guys. And if you want more information on the wide receiver, in this system and the upside I think they have. So let's move on to our fourth guy here, Justin. This one was interesting to me because you want to talk about Lucky Sutton, who is currently a running back at San Diego State University. Obviously, this system has a lot of intrigue for people because, you know, Sean Lewis' system hopefully gets going again year two. And when Sean Lewis finds his guy, like he did with Marquez Cooper for so many years, boy, does he feed the absolute hell out of him. But here's the other thing. When he doesn't have a guy, boy, can that system get messy real quick. So, Justin, what do you like so much about Lucky Sutton, especially over some of the transfers they brought in, like Byron Cardwell and Christian Washington?
Yeah, well, I mean, this one's kind of a crapshoot. I wanted to put a few wild cards on here. I mean, granted, there was a limited selection of players as well. But I think the thinking here was pretty simple on my part. You know, Lucky Sutton in the spring was the starting running back. I think that blurb is even still on his Fantrax profile. Granted, that was before Byron Cardwell transferred in, but Washington, I believe, was already there. I think he transferred in the wintertime. And so Sutton already sort of being at the top of the hierarchy there above Washington kind of sort of cemented that in my mind. the wild card, I guess, for me is now Caldwell, who's coming over from Cal. That whole running back room emptied out. And so we'll see sort of where he falls now within that hierarchy, because this is a former P4 guy. He started his career at Oregon. So he's of intrigue as well. And like I said, this is kind of, this is obviously a dart throw. It could turn really messy really quickly. But Lucky Sun's one of those guys where, he was very productive in high school, was a really sort of interesting name coming out, in C2C or in sort of dynasty drafts. His career hasn't really panned out. He hasn't really played a lot of games actually up until this point. I think he's 3 years into his career, played something like 10 or 11 full games. So he's been injured a lot, which in and of itself is a concern, right? Durability, if we're looking for a guy who can handle the rock a lot, that's also a concern. So there are quite a few concerns, but I think my thinking is one, Sean Lewis's system is pretty good in terms of track record, at least when he had Marques Cooper. We'll see what happens if he can replicate that with a different running back. But the system pedigree seems pretty good, and Lucky Sutton was seemingly the starter in the spring. So that was kind of my thinking with adding him on this list.
If I remember correctly, Lucky Sutton's got a lot of speed to him as well. I think that was one of the things that really made him stand out for Campus of Canton a couple years back in the freshman guide. I should have looked up that freshman guide and seen kind of what we noted about him back then. Because you're right, like that's kind of what makes me pause a little bit on Sutton is that there's just so little production really to kind of go off on with him versus like Christian Washington. Again, he just got done with a pretty solid season there at Coastal Carolina. You would think that he was looking for somewhere that would, be a bit more consistent in terms of getting him the rock versus Coastal Carolina. Boy, their running back strategy over the last several years has just been a big head scratcher. Byron Cardwell, I agree with you, very much just an absolute wild card. He was phenomenal in his limited run at Oregon. His first 2 years, right? Again, 7.5 yards per carry his freshman year, 7 yards per carry his sophomore year. Granted, on unlimited touches his sophomore year, but then he gets hurt. He comes back, definitely not looking quite the same. His last year at Cal, just over 3 yards per carry. His yards after contact per attempt dropped from about, 3.5 to 4 to down to just over 2 yards after contact per attempt. His breakaway percentage dropping all the way to zero last year. Now, is that the new norm with Cardwell? Is that him coming back from his injury? Because according to the latest article I'm seeing here from Sports Illustrated, his ankle is fully healed, right? So he injured his knee in the, or, okay, no, his ankle healed, but then he re-injured his knee in the spring of 2023. So now it's a question of, was last year just him trying to get his bearings back and he'll be better this year? Or is that just a new normal for Cardwell? If it's a new normal for Cardwell, I do think that Lucky Sutton here has a pretty good shot. If Cardwell's back, he might be the value here at the end of drafts, I would say.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I liked Sutton a lot more before Cardwell transferred in, as these things happen, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Sutton's been pretty solid over his. Over the last couple of years, again, near 40% career breakaway percentage, 5.5 yards per per attempt. Has no receiving work, though. I will say that much. So that's
Yeah.
not a
Although if
little
I if
worrying, but again, he's just not really been out there for them to do that.
Yeah, well, and also if I remember correctly, I don't know if Marques Cooper had a lot of receiving usage under Lewis. I know he was an absolute carry hog, but I can't remember if they used him in the receiving game.
I'm gonna look that up real quick, see if I can find him real quick. Thank
Because on one
you,
hand, you'd think
PFF.
they would, because he was a pretty
Oh yeah,
small running back.
24 targets last year, 22 targets the year before. Like
Oh, okay,
he got
not
some
bad.
work. Now it's not
Yeah.
he wasn't super efficient. Don't get me wrong. He had about 6.6 yards per reception. So, but
Well, yeah.
all right, let's move on here. Let's go to another guy that I think is just kind of going too low right now, and that is Lennon Montgomery, the running back out of East Carolina. Again, if you're looking for guys at the end of drafts that I think are kind of flying under, like there's just systems flying under the radar, a lot of people just aren't talking about this team. I think Montgomery fits into that category as well. Is it me? Because again, what part of the reason why I think it's super weird that like it's the system's flying under the radar, but I guess it makes sense when you consider that like Rajai Harris, the RB1 for East Carolina last year, had like the quietest 1,100 yard, 11 touchdown campaign ever. Like, I feel like people just kind of forget that he did that last year. He had a really nice workload, had a really nice season. Like, I think people are kind of forgetting to ask the question of, like, hey, who's going to take over that workload this year? Again, dude had 200 touches last year. So, granted, I'm not going to pretend like this is a slam dunk that London Montgomery is going to be, like, I got to say it at least once you're on the show, Justin. It's not a guarantee he'll be an actual volume pick. But when you look at the system, right, Rajai Harris had just under 200 carries in the regular season last year. The year before that, where this offensive coordinator comes from, I forget his name off the top of my head. I'll look it up real quick while I'm speaking. He comes from Ole Miss, right? And the year before that, they ran the ball like 270 times with Quinshon Judkins, right? John David Baker. I knew he was going to come up with a name. So that is what causes this two-year carry average to go up to like 220 carries on average over the last 2 years. So that puts a really solid season if Montgomery is truly the guy here. Now, ECU has some solid options. They have Montgomery. Marlon Gunn's still hanging around. They bring in Parker Jenkins from from Houston, who I know a lot of people are pretty interested in. But also, again, ECU had some options last year. They had Javis Bond, they had Marlon Gunn, they had London Montgomery, and they still found a way to get Harris that solid workload. I'm willing to bet on Montgomery over Gunn being that guy, and from all reports, Parker Jenkins isn't really threatening to be the RB1 here, so I'm not really considering him. So that brings it down to Montgomery and Gunn. They may have been pretty close in terms of carries per game last year. Montgomery had 6.4 versus Gunn had 5.5. But when it came to efficiency metrics, Montgomery absolutely destroyed Gunn. Montgomery had 5.4 yards per carry versus Gunn's 3.7. Montgomery had a 35% breakaway percentage compared to Gunn's 8.9%, well below that 25% threshold that I kind of look for. Montgomery also beat Gunn on yards after contact per carry, although I'll admit that's a lot closer. So I think there's a really good shot that Montgomery, a former blue chip recruit who has started at Penn State, now transferring down a level here, could absolutely be in for a volume pick workload here at East Carolina. Very much worth a last five round pick. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, well, you make a lot of compelling points, and I'll expect the royalty check in the mail for all the volume pick term usage on this video. Yeah, you know, London Montgomery, I don't know that he ever started at Penn State, but certainly was playing at Penn State. And
he didn't get any snaps, actually.
Well, okay, well, even worse. But the fact that he was recruited not there, great. I mean, no, it's not great, not ideal for sure. But again, you know, a potential P4 athlete, I guess you could categorize him as, I mean, a P4, high P4 program saw enough upside, potential, whatever you want to call it, in him to recruit him, bring him in. So that's always encouraging. I think my issue with this backfield is just the uncertainty of trying to decide like who is the guy. I mean, you've made a compelling case for Montgomery. It sounds reasonable to me. I think I'm still sort of in the state of, well, I don't really know necessarily who's RB1 here. I mean, I don't know that I saw the most recent report where Jenkins isn't really in the running. I remember earlier some of the beat writers were kind of impressed by him, but you know, I'll take your word for it as well in terms of the hierarchy of how that's working out. But even if it's just Gunn and Montgomery, I'm still sort of in limbo there of trying to figure out, okay, well, who's really the guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting player. I've seen some people have been drafting Montgomery too now in some of these later drafts. So he's certainly a guy who was on my radar before.
That's probably me.
It probably was you, yeah. And so, yeah, this is an interesting system because, again, that OC, I mean, he's only had a couple of years, I think, of play calling. So sort of a theme, I guess, of today's video, a lot of systems that are using sort of a small sample size that we're trying to extrapolate from. But he's an intriguing player, Montgomery. I think I'm just in wait and see mode.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that this very much has the same smell that, the Montana State offensive coordinator going to Temple, right? Where, again, I'm trying to extrapolate only 1 year really of play calling and then just the system that he came from before that point. Again, I will say that compared this to the Montana State guy, like Montana State guy, his 2 year carry average for his running backs was 142 versus this is pointing at 200 plus carries here. But I agree with you 100%. there's absolutely a possibility they could completely shift here, go complete committee this year. And I can't sit there and not say that I couldn't see it coming. So, especially, again, as I point out, they got decent options between three different guys. It's just if I have to pick one, I'm going to go with Montgomery. All right. Moving on to your third guy here, Dustin. You want to discuss Mr. Amari O.J. Arnold, running back out of Georgia Southern. What do you got here?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just really like this program. I think it's sort of a cool college football program. It has a lot of mystique to it. They've got a long history of strong running backs throughout their tenure, not necessarily the staff, but Georgia Southern. So I'll just shout that out first and foremost. And yeah, I feel like I've been holding on to this backfield for the last like 3 years and keep coming up empty-handed. Primarily, it was the previous guy, Jalen White, who was there, felt like forever. And he had a good year a few seasons ago. I can't remember exactly when it was, but then it had just been sort of disappointing season after disappointing season. And with Arnold, I remember rostering him in Nate's Dynasty League, which admittedly is a much deeper pool for those listeners of this podcast. It's a Dynasty League, firstly, so the set of parameters for who's valuable is a little different. But I remember Arnold having some decently productive games, especially when Jalen White was injured. And that's kind of when I noticed him for the first time. I think this was back in like 2023. And so I always kind of kept an eye on him and sort of tabbed him as the guy who will probably be next up when Jalen White eventually moves on. He didn't, you know, Jalen White, I expected him to move on in 2024. He didn't, came back, had another kind of half decent season, but still sort of disappointing. And now Arnold sort of steps up and it's his time to shine. And I actually am very excited or interested, I should say, in what he's going to be able to do now that the torch is his, now that he's the guy, I think. Again, this is not, it's a G5 program. It's a little hard to get information on, but I believe Arnold's going to be their lead carrier this year. And I really want to see what he can do. I think he's got a good sort of receiving profile in addition to his rushing profile. The offensive efficiency overall, I know, is going to be a concern for a lot of people. And that primarily, I think, stems from the quarterback play, J.C. French, who, to my knowledge, is probably going to be the starter again this year. So offensively, there may be some struggles. But, I think with O.J. Arnold, there's enough for me to be intrigued in terms of what he's done in his career so far. And if they can't pass the ball that well, maybe that just means they run the ball more. I know that hasn't exactly been what has happened the last couple of seasons with Jalen White, but maybe third time's the charm here with O.J. Arnold in 2025. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's a player who intrigues me quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, no, it'll definitely be, I think, Arnold being the RB1 here. They got David Umbadinga. I definitely screwed that up. So bad. And then our good old buddy Terrence Gibbs, remember when we were all excited about him going to Georgia Southern after he destroyed his knees? He's still RB3 there and probably will continue to be throughout his career, unfortunately. So yeah, Arnold will be the guy here. The White concern is, it's so interesting, right? Because like, you're right, it's felt like disappointment after disappointment year. But here's the thing, I think it's because he's just so up and down. Because when you look at his final stats each year, it doesn't look that bad, right? 923 yards and 10 touchdowns in 2022, 899 yards, 9 touchdowns in 2023. And it wasn't really until this past year where he very much disappointed, just lost. I think White just ran out of steam last year. Only 650 yards, but 12 touchdowns. Dude was like producing touchdowns, which is definitely something you like to see for a guy like Arnold here, coming here in the future, that you like the idea of him just being given that floor of 9 touchdowns throughout the season, and hopefully he can, perform better than a near retirement home Jalen White did last year. He's, like you said, he's got some good receiving as well. So if for some reason J.C. French does take a huge step this year and they're chucking the ball again, 40 times a game again, Arnold should be in for a good amount of targets there as well. But as you kind of alluded to, God, this offense has just completely changed last year with J.C. French. I point this out in the CFF guide, and quite frankly, I just take J.C. French to town in that, because he's supposed to be this like dual threat quarterback, coming in, and all it did was just take this offense from being super fun with 45 to 47 yard or pass attempts per game down to 32 pass attempts per game last year. And in addition to that, because French is a dual threat guy, he is taking away opportunities from our top running backs, right? I mean, Jaylen White went from having 160 touches in less than 12 games last year to 149 in 13 games last year, right? And what did French do with all those attempts, those 111 or 117 attempts he got last year? 239 yards and 2 touchdowns. So it's not like he was, you know, being Lamar Jackson Jr. over here or something like that. When he got the chance to run the ball, he wasn't even doing anything that great. So that just makes me all the more frustrated. Hopefully the staff can kind of fix that.
I'm hoping year two with the JC French saga goes better. You know, sometimes first year starting, things can get kind of hairy. Second year, you know, there's a full off season. They can maybe tailor the offense a little bit more, tinker with it.
Maybe, I'm hoping but like Davis Brin and Kyle Van Treese were not good quarterbacks, and they came in and performed well in this system year one. So like, I'm wondering what's the holdup with JC French.
To be fair, though, I think both those guys started somewhere else, right, before they came to Georgia Southern.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, let's move on. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, I think we covered it.
Cool, let's move on. We'll go to my fourth guy here, and this is where I take a page out of your book and come up with a fun, punny name for these guys. This is the Brunson Burner, a.k.a. Jordan Brunson, the running back out of Miami of Ohio. And obviously, if you look at the last couple of years here with Keon Mosey last year, and then, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. The guy's at Georgia State.
Rashad Amos.
Rashad Amos, right? Like, this staff in recent years has started to lean towards a bit more of a, you know, and maybe not a workhorse per se, because again, the 2-year carry average here is 165, but a clear RB1. Right. Again, obviously not like your 200 plus, you know, volume pigs or anything like that, but a guy who's, they're willing to give a guy more carries versus the years before that it was just an absolute mess of a committee in this backfield. But this coaching staff was so frustrating last year because Keon Mosey, if he didn't score from outside the red zone, he just wasn't scoring. Right, because they took him out in the red zone every single time. I've never seen a player used and abused between the 20s, like Mosey was, only be taken out in the areas where touches are needed the most when it came to fantasy, right? Like, dude had almost 1,000 yards and had 4 touchdowns on the season, which is absolutely crazy to me. But here's the good news. The guy that they then inserted into the offense when they got down to the red zone is now the guy who's likely to be RB1, and that is, again, Jordan Brunson here. So I'm hoping we don't have to worry about that as much this year, and they're willing to trust a guy like Brunson from, you know, the 0-yard line all the way to the 0-yard line. I think that could end up being for a really, really nice Mac play here towards the end of drafts. And it also really helps that Brunson, despite the fact he's a bigger dude, has been very efficient. You know, 6.7 yards per attempt over the last 2 years, almost a 50% breakaway percentage in the carries that he has gotten. He's got 3.4 yards after contact per attempt, which is really, really solid. I think he could end up being not only the RB1 for Miami of Ohio, but very quickly establish himself as the RB1 and give himself a higher ceiling throughout the entirety of the season compared to the previous guys, versus the other guys had to kind of come along a little later, especially once they got into MAC play. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I like this idea. I remember you messaging me out of the blue, I think, about this player a few weeks ago or something like that. It was actually the first time, I'm sure I'd like come across him, and that was the first time I actually like sort of thought about him. I was like, well, Jordan Brunson, Miami, Ohio running back, interesting. And then you sort of broke it down, I think, in the Twitter DMs, and I started to see the vision there. You know, you're absolutely right. This staff has kind of done a 180 with what they do with the running back position. And I always find that kind of interesting, just staffs that break tendency all of a sudden and start a new trend. It's sort of, I always wonder what the catalyst for doing that was. Maybe just they find they're more successful when they do that, not sure. But Miami of Ohio, certainly one of those places, right, where it was just, there was never really any value in this running back room for most seasons I can remember playing CFF. And then all of a sudden, a couple seasons ago, the floodgates kind of just opened, you know, and they definitely seem to have a type. They like these bigger running backs who At least previously, it was kind of like, P4 guys coming down. Brunson sort of fits that profile. Not that he's a P4 guy, but he's a bigger running back. And if you look at sort of what the previous two running backs had done here as RB1s, decently productive, nothing crazy, but pretty good seasons. I think with it being a MAC program, again, it's always tough to get info in terms of what the hierarchy of the position groups are. So you're always kind of playing a guessing game a little bit there. But I can see the vision here, and I think it's a good idea. Again, with MAC programs, you kind of I don't know Miami Ohio's out of conference schedule off the top of my head
I
here, but
just looked it
September is
up.
always tough. Yeah.
It's very unfortunate to start the season. They start off at Wisconsin and at Rutgers before they get a bye week.
Yeah, it could have been better, but look, I mean, most MAC players that you take, regardless, it's you're gonna have a couple of games September that you have to just plug through. So there's nothing unique necessarily there about Brunson, and I'm sure probably one of the other out-of-conference games isn't as bad, right?
Yeah, they got UNLV in week 4, and then Lindenwood is their week 5 matchup, and then it's just pure Mac from there on out.
Yeah, could be worse. Certainly could be worse. So I like this idea a lot.
All righty. We'll go ahead and move on to your fourth guy here, Justin, and that is Mr. Salahuddin Ala, the running back out of Oregon State. This is one of those caveats I got to mention for the stats on the page, because I think we were both in agreement that Hankerson's the RB1 for
Yes.
Oregon State, but I think. And forgive me if I'm stepping on your toes here, but I think the direction you're going to go with is that there's room for two running backs here at Oregon State to be CFF relevant. So I'll let you take it away from here.
Yeah, no, that's you're exactly right. So, I mean, and we only have to look 1 year back to sort of get an idea for what division is here with these two running backs. So, yeah, of course, obviously Hankerson's still there, and he's RB1 for sure. And I like Hankerson a lot this year too, by the way. But if we look at sort of what him and oh gosh, what is his name? Jam Griffin was the other running back, and it's actually kind of strange. If you look at Hankerson's game log last year, he was actually more productive in the games with Griffin, which is just kind of you would have expected him to truly go nuclear after Griffin got injured. I think it was week 5, week 4, something like that.
Offensive line issues.
Yeah, well, there's a myriad of different factors, right, that could play out. But I guess my point is there's clearly room, at least there was last year in terms of how the coaches called this offense for two running backs. And they were both averaging, I think, close to 20 and maybe even 20 points per game. And so obviously Griffin moves on. And so somebody has to kind of fill in for, that role. Salahuddin Ala, by all accounts, I think is going to be that guy. I mean, he's pretty heralded as a recruit coming in. He was actually getting some buzz as a freshman last year, and the coaches have talked about him a bunch during last season, during the off seasons, and I think they like him a lot. They make it sound like he's a pretty good talent that they've sort of discovered as a diamond in the rough. And so, I'm excited, I think, to see what he can do as an RB1B. I don't know that, I would classify it as RB1, RB2. I think it's kind of RB1A, RB1B. I think they're both going to get a significant amount of volume. I would say Salahuddin Ala can probably, see anywhere between 10, 15 touches per game. That's kind of what I'm hoping for here. Anything more than that, of course, would be great and a bonus. But certainly, I think, around 15 touches per game seems well within his range of outcomes. Obviously, they have a new quarterback. Offense may be a little different, but if they do anything like what they did last year, I think certainly there's value in the second running back in the system.
I think he's going to end up right around the middle of what you're expecting there. Because currently, over the last 2 years, with Ryan Gunderson, who is the offensive coordinator for Oregon State here, the RB2, when it comes to systems that he's been a part of, have averaged 160 carries, which to me is more than enough, especially if Ala can kind of improve upon his efficiency from last year. Last year, he ran for 4.9 yards per carry, 22 breakaway percentage. I think I think he can improve on that, especially given the fact that he averaged almost 4 yards after contact per attempt. So I think he absolutely can kind of get to a second gear there. The other piece about this is another offensive coordinator with Ryan Gunderson, right, where we only have 1 year of him calling plays. But the year before, looking at what system he was a part of, is still, I think, interesting to see how that might have influenced him going into Oregon State. And lo and behold, he was the quarterbacks coach at UCLA, and the offense they were running there had two running backs. It had Carson Steele and TJ Harden, right? So clearly, I think he was influenced by that, and I think he's going to try to do it again. I think this is a great call. I like Saladin Halah. I mean, I not to say that I was like the founding father of love for him on CFF, but I know I was definitely one of the earliest people on him when I mentioned him in defending the Natty last year as a potential pickup later on in drafts. And I'm happy to say that he's performed well so far, and I like him as a late round option this year. Because another guy, though, if Hankerson were to go down, there's a nuclear option for Allah, which is another thing you should absolutely be looking for in the later round of drafts.
Yeah, for sure. And yes, I have to give you your props on this one, Jared. I believe you mentioning Allah is the first I heard about him. So kudos to you there.
Smiles everywhere. All right. We got two more to touch on here. Let's go ahead and get on over to it. This last one was kind of a fun one. I think this is definitely my biggest reach among it. But again, we're talking last five round kind of guys. This is, you know, let's go into fairyland. Let's go into fantasy land here. Let's talk about some crazy ways that guys can get a ton of work here. And I'm going to talk about Javon Jacobs, who I have labeled on the screen as wide receiver slash running back because that is how he is treated in Fantrax. When you look at the system here with Bronco Mendenhall, it's not pretty. I'll fully admit the 2 year carry average among Bronco Mendenhall's last two top running backs, 134 carries, right? But last year, Eli Sanders, I think he got about 150 carries. I can't remember off the top of my head, but you know, he was hyper efficient. So that was good enough to get him to 1,000 yards in the Mountain West. And good news, Javon Jacobs is a very efficient running back as well. He's averaged just under 7 yards per attempt in his workload the last 2 years that he has been out on the field. So he can absolutely replicate that if that is what Bronco Mendenhall wants to do again. The other thing that I think is even more interesting is that Utah State currently has nobody to throw to. They return two targets from last year's receivers. They're going to have to get creative or find some real diamonds in the rough when it comes to wide receivers because they didn't really bring anybody in. They got Brock Lane, their top tight end, back. And then you have Jacobs here, who's a really, really solid receiving back, right? Even as a backup running back, Jacobs got 22 targets last year. Now, I think he has a pretty solid chance to be the RB1. I know they bring in Miles Davis from BYU as well, but Jacobs is following Bronco Mendenhall from New Mexico to Utah State, so there's a level of familiarity there. He's a smaller back. He's 5'10", 190, but you know, he's not tiny to the point where you're like, oh, he can only be a scat back. I think it's a decent shot that he could be the RB1, and if he is that RB1, I think there's a decent chance that he could see upwards of 40, 45, 50 targets because they just have legitimately nobody else to throw to. So, Justin, am I talking crazy? Is this too big of a stretch here? What do you think?
No, I mean, you know, for the topic of today's discussion, I think there's a lot of players that are within bounds, and they're all going to be a bit of a stretch. Admittedly, I do not know that much about sort of Utah State's offense this year. I think
nobody does.
In a similar boat. I was just going to say, yeah, don't know that anybody can actually claim otherwise. And I think a lot of the lines of thinking that you outlined, I think, makes sense to me. You know, I don't know, like their OC, right, I think is coming over from San Jose State. He was like the passing game coordinator last year. So he's a complete wild card in terms of like what he's going to want to do on offense. I mean, maybe he does something similar to what Craig Stutzman did at San Jose State, which would be cool if Utah State ends up having some really productive wide receivers too. But who knows, right? Like it's hard to know exactly what they're going to want to do. Bronco Mendenhall, you know, he's been around some good offenses, but he's like a defensive guy, as you know, you've debated with Nate, I think, on this show. So, you know, is it his system? Is it, you know, is it just the system of his OCs that have been really good under him? It's hard to know. I guess this year will kind of be that litmus test. But I can dig the vision that you've outlined here for Jacobs, right? I mean, there's not a lot. I think we know who the quarterback is. I guess we know who the tight end is, but there's not a lot of like really any sort of answers at skill position, except for, I guess, Jacobs is kind of a name that stands out at running back. So, you know, I can see sort of the reasoning for taking a dart throw with this player. I don't see why not. If it's sort of the end of draft, there is sort of a nice upside here, especially with his receiving profile. If it's a PPR league, so yeah, I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah, again, the as I mentioned before, the problem with Utah State is that again, there's just nothing coming back. Nothing coming back. Kahuna Davis is their top wide receiver coming back, and he had two targets and no catches last year. Everybody else is just gone. So it's
Yeah, it could
like
be a rough year for them.
it could be a rough year for them, but also as I pointed out before, Bronco Mendenhall, in my opinion, came into a worse situation at New Mexico last year and turned that into gold.
True.
Right? So I
Yep.
think he's I don't think he would have taken this Utah State job if he wasn't sitting there thinking like, oh, this is about to tank my career because, you know, this team's about to be so bad in year one. Right? So I trust him. Again, him and Jason Beck or Robert Renee, whoever you want to credit with those offenses the last couple of years, they have thrived in areas where they have non-conventional pass catchers. So that's why I'm a big fan of Jacobs here. You know, Brock Lane is a tight end that I've been starting to take more and more in drafts. Because again, they got nobody else to throw to. And I've reached out to beat reporters around Utah State, and they have really good beat reporters, surprisingly, for a G5 program. And boy, are they just, even they're stumped about what this receiver room is going to look like going forward. So, all right, let's hit up your last guy here, Justin. You want to discuss a Boise State running back, but not one that a lot of people are drafting. So here's how I will phrase this one, Justin. For this system stats on this page, I put the stats for the RB2 at Boise State the last couple of years. Right? How insane of a take am I about to hear? Am I are you, because I'm assuming that you're talking about this guy as the potential RB2, you know, behind Sherrod or Gaines, whoever ends up being the RB1, and then, you know, Dubar's got a decent shot at being the RB2, depending on, you know, Gaines' health, stuff like that, right? Or are you saying that Dubar has a legitimate shot to be the RB1 for Boise State here?
Well, maybe I saved the best for last year. I think yes, but maybe my reasoning will disappoint you. I think when you look at this backfield, right? So Cyre Gaines has this injury that's, he was supposed to be back much earlier. He's still sort of, in this weird limbo. I think he's been cleared to come back to practice in June, but like he was out for a very long time. I mean, he literally got injured like second game of the season. So it's basically a season-ending injury. And then, it's almost similar to CJ Baxter at Texas, right? Where it's like, okay, he's back, but he's been gone for a very long time. And we're talking about young players who need that time of development as well. So who knows how he's going to look, right? Upon his return, when we're talking about running backs and major injuries, I never really like to forecast that they're going to come back and be the best version of themselves. I don't think I've seen that very often. And then Malik Sherrod, who I like a lot. I've liked him for a few seasons now, but he's a guy who's struggled with injuries himself. He's had a hard time dealing with a heavy workload there at Fresno. I don't know that he's going to be relied on to the exact same degree at Boise State, but let's say Cyre Gaines isn't, back to his full self. Malik Sherrod has to sort of take on a heavier workload. We've seen him break multiple times now, and it doesn't surprise me really because he's a smaller running back too. So it's not that. It's not really that surprising that he might have some issues with durability. Now, Dubar himself, his whole backfield really is coming off an injury, and Dubar has had some troubles there as well. But he's a bigger back at least. Like he has the size, fits that kind of profile to handle a requisite workload to be a heavy carry running back. And as far as I know, last I heard, he's back. He's been practicing for a while now. He's good to go. But he's a guy, he's also missed some time. So you can say some similar things that I said about Gaines regarding Dubar. But Dubar is one of those guys where he had a lot of I think a lot of people were excited about him once upon a time, and now he's kind of fallen by the wayside, right? I think it's presumed that he's been passed up on the depth chart by one younger guy and then another transfer who's been brought in. So this is kind of like a post-hype sleeper. Now he was never like a very hyped player in CFF, but I think he had more interest a couple of years ago than what he has now. And I see a path for him to be a very like a surprisingly productive player if things around him start breaking, which there's a precedent for that. And this is a great system. Well, to your point that earlier, I don't know that I can call this a system. I guess there's school characteristics where this Boise State program as a whole has done really well. But this coaching staff who's here, It's basically just been Ashton Jeanty. We don't really know what their system is or how productive it'll be without a ridiculously all-world talent at running back. So we'll see this year that it'll be a good barometer for that. But I think there's still going to be successful running the football, and it's possible that Dubark could find himself in a position where he might end up being sort of higher on that pecking order than people might have imagined in the offseason.
I definitely think a lot of it comes down to what actually happens with Gaines. The beat report around Boise State is just so dang confident that Gaines will be back and back to his full self. And I agree with you, though, that like you don't miss 10 games out of the season and then all of spring and just come back and be your best version of yourself. At the very least, it's going to take him a while to like fully get back up to snuff. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Gaines be, RB1 second half of the season, right? Sherrod be the RB1 first half of the season. And maybe it could be that Dubar just has that steady workload throughout the entire time, right? Because again, like you said, Sherrod's known for getting hurt last couple of seasons. Dubar's got his own injuries, but I agree with you that he's got a better build. The other kind of wild card here is, and you mentioned it, is Nate Potter, the new offensive coordinator, right? With Cutter, I believe, retiring as offensive coordinator, right? Potter comes in and he's promoted from within. So you would think that they're going to run a similar system. But, what little we have heard is that he seems pretty set on running a committee, which, if I was running this Boise State backfield, I'd probably feel the same way. You got three really good backs. And Dylan, we haven't even mentioned Dylan Riley, who's also performed really well this spring. So I do think there's a decent shot that even if they run the ball, even if they run the ball 500, 600 times, there's a decent shot that like none of these guys break 150 carries because they're just going to keep rotating these guys over and over again. But like you said, an injury or two, suddenly any of these guys' value could skyrocket pretty quickly. So why not take a shot on that? So yeah, I don't blame, I don't hate it as like a last five round pick and everything like that. So, no, great call out.
Yeah, I'll take that endorsement. I don't hate it. That's the winning
I don't hate it.
model.
That's the best that you're gonna get at the at, again in the last five rounds of a draft. So,
I can't ask for much more.
all righty. Well, we flew through that. Wow, we're only at 1 hour and 6 minutes. Good job, Justin. We kept it nice and short for everybody here today. Yeah, before we get out of here, what are you working on, man? Obviously, we're working on the CFF guide over here and everything, but what kind of articles you got locked and loaded?
Yeah, it's same old. I'm always doing player profiles, just talking about stuff within the CFF realm that is of interest to me and is of interest to, I think, other people. So today I was actually doing some writing right before we hopped on the show, just doing some stuff on the Hawaii offense. That's a very exciting program. I think this year a do or die year for the head coach and the regime over there, in my opinion. I guess we'll see what happens. So yeah, stay tuned for that. And hopefully can appear back on this show sometime in the future, maybe during the season. So stay tuned for that.
I mean, we got our running back crash course show coming up next month, so I can't imagine a better person to discuss that with. So, who knows? You guys will
Sounds
probably see
good.
him back here sooner rather than later. So, yeah. With all that being said, again, appreciate all of you guys listening. Like I said, here at Campus Academy, we got the CFF guide coming out on July 4th. In addition to this show, please go check out the live shows we have been doing over on the Chasing Natty YouTube channel. We've had two phenomenal guests so far in Elliot Mays and Josh Chevalier. Both of those shows were absolutely fantastic. This upcoming week, or not upcoming week, excuse me, I forget, we're recording this in the past of when it is going to be released. If you're listening to this on the Monday that is released, we just got done recording with John Lobb. Obviously, now I have let slip that this is being recorded in the future, or recorded in the past, but I will tell you right now, John Lobb is the best. He is a absolute veteran and kingmaker of CFF. He will provide a ton of information, so make sure you check out that show. And then the week after, the next live show that you're listening, compared to where you're listening, I'm so confused. I'm mixing myself up on the time here. If you're listening to this on Monday, the next live show will be that next Sunday, and we are going to have on Mike Bainbridge, and we are going to run a tadpole poll. A tadpole bowl. Oh my God, I'm losing it, Justin. A tadpole bowl style draft for that episode, and we will be discussing how you get ready for those as those kick off here at the end of June and into July. So.
To be fair, Tadpole Bowl is something of like it's sort of a tongue twister kind of, so
It is, but I am slowly losing my mind here regardless, Justin. I think that was just the thing. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. Anyway, Justin, appreciate it, man. You're awesome. With that, we've come to the end of our show. Again, thanks all you all for listening. If you have not already, leave a like, comment, and subscribe. If you're on YouTube, you're on the podcast side of things, follow the show, leave a 5-star review. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus Canton podcast family. They got lots of great shows related to anything to the college fantasy game. Like I said, we'll see you guys back here next Monday. Until then, really appreciate you guys. Hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.